Here's the big question this show answers. How do we leverage technology and human science to positively impact our personal and professional life? The Tech Human Experience has the answer. Here's your host, Inc. 5000 tech founder, neuroscience junkie, and Navy SEAL wannabe, Javier Guerra.
Hello, my fellow tech humans. Today's guest is a technology leader with over 25 years of experience in digital transformation. Her strategic vision and expert navigation of complex digital environments have helped her become a pivotal figure in the industry. As the head of technology strategic planning at one of the world's largest financial institutions, she not only forecasts the future of tech, but actively designs it, blending cutting-edge solutions with human-centric design. She's an advocate for social change and deeply committed to social impact, channeling her expertise in building schools in Africa and supporting healthcare initiatives through her nonprofit work. Please welcome Mary Austin. Thanks for joining us today, Mary.
Thank you so much, Harvey. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's always great talking with you. I wanted to start today with a statistic or a fact, so to speak. So, you know, it's in relation to digital transformation, ROI, return on investment. So companies that undertook digital transformation projects in 2023 reported a 45% faster time to market for new products and services. From your experience, how critical is the speed for maintaining competitive advantage in today's fast-paced digital world?
Thank you so much for that great question. Yes, from my experience, you know, as you all know, we all live in a digital space today, right? So companies that are embarking, and for me, from an execution perspective, which is where I've played a role in driving this digital transformation, it is so crucial that we, companies continue to focus and digitize their products by building a team environment, an execution platform that allow them to drive this execution in a pace and speed that allow the products to get to the customer's hands. Because today, everybody wants something in their hand like yesterday. Once they hear it today, they're already Googling and looking for it to be able to use it, leverage it, maximize it in their day-to-day use. So, those statistics are, you know, right on track with companies that I've been associated with that have really, really put the efforts and the time and the finances to drive the turnaround of products hitting the market in a pace that will allow the customer base to use that product and leverage it to their everyday use. So, It's a very good question, and I think it's something that I've seen going on every day in the industries that I've been involved with.
Yeah, it makes me think about just human nature, right? It's the immediate gratification. We have everything at our fingertips now, and then companies like Amazon come along and they make it like it's like everybody expects it now. It's like you should just be able to like jump on and click a few buttons and get what you need. And so the expectation kind of bleeds into every other facet of life and technology and organizations. So it seems that the customer's demand expectations are continuously rising. And then you think about the younger generation, right? Like they've never known anything different. As they grow and get into the workforce, it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
You're so right. You know, like the barriers for companies like Amazon, Google's of the world, newer company. They're not new per se. They've been in business for a very long time, so I wouldn't use the word new, but they started with that strategy as their vision, as their goal. When you start thinking of some of the industries I've been involved in, healthcare, gaming and technology, banking, all of these industries are brick and mortar businesses that are trying to catch up by changing their business models, by revamping and re-envision their products in the same digital space. And as you know, and data drives all of that, right? So, you know, for example, Amazon started collecting their data and leveraging it and building new products as they grow. These companies were so, on this other side of the equation where I've been involved, you have companies that have been in existence for over hundreds of years, like 105, you know, hundreds of years, that they have disparate systems that were not communicating with each other. And now they have to go and try to normalize and bring that data, you know, to be able to leverage it to compete and be, you know, to digitize their product. It's not easy, but, you know, it's happening. And they really, the drive and the dedication to continue to, you know, to advance themselves. And if as you know, companies that refuse to do that, some of them are no longer with us, right? So, you know, they're long gone. So it's a continuous strategy, it's a continuous execution platform to be able to leverage and harmonize your data from your disparate system, standardize them, build, a mass data structure, leveraging whatever technology you want, you know, data warehouses that existed before. Now you're going to try to convert that and be able to build this new data platforms, big data that we all, you know, people hear about in the industry. So it's challenging, but it's doable, right? Because I've seen it happen. So I'm very confident that in the near future, we won't even know. We won't even, you know, it's like you think it today, tomorrow it's in the market, right? But you have to have the right foundation. You have to build the right foundation to be able to get there. And that's where sometimes I see, you know, I've been a consultant too. I forgot to mention that part. That's, you know, consulting for different industries, different companies. That's one of the struggles I saw in companies being able to digitize their product is you have to first build that framework, that foundation to be able to get you there. You can't just jump from point A to point Z and hope that you can compete and you're just going to fall flat on your face.
Yeah, especially, you know, with the advent of AI, right, being just advancing so quickly. In order to digest that data, there has to be some sort of, like you said, a foundation of data governance and just to be have that data effectively organized so that there can be made some sort of intelligent use by automation, artificial intelligence, you name it. So it's going to be a challenge for, I would imagine, a number of years for many organizations.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. But the companies that end up at the top are the ones that do not rush into trying to build or leverage AI with wrong data set. And that's why, you know, what you're doing, your message with TechHuman falls right into that, making sure that we're not rushing and leveraging data that is incomplete or data that is inaccurate or skewing the data to be able to hit, you know, get your product to the market faster than, you know, your competitor. It's about, you know, doing the due diligence to make sure that you aggregate your data, you leverage the data in a way that will create products that will help humanity.
Yeah, it's interesting times that we're living in. It's going to be very interesting to see the next few years unfold.
Very, so exciting. Looking forward to it.
So let's dive into today's topic. Simplifying Business Transformation, A Guide to Efficient and Strategic Execution. In this episode, we'll discuss the principles of ownership, efficiency, and strategic execution crucial for successful technology transformations, highlighting the role of intentional actions and critical inquiry. We'll also explore how technology is leveraged to foster positive change. So, very interesting topic today that we're diving into. And, I'm eager to understand, you know, some of your viewpoints on this. But if we're talking about really along the lines of incorporating technology and early stage planning, so to speak. What ways of early tech considerations and project planning, like, in what ways have they led to better outcomes or efficiencies?
Oh, gosh, I can't even. And I've done a lot of executions in my life and in my 25 years of, you know, being in technology. I will say it's not even a question that should be asked. It's something that needs to just happen. Having technology at the table, when you're thinking of that idea that you want to bring to fruition, just like we just talked about a few minutes ago on how fast technology is moving and bringing in AI. There's no time back in the days when we used to say you have to write a requirement document about 100 pages, and then it gets dissected down to use cases that then gets validated. We don't have that time anymore, right? Because the speed to market is so fast. So I'm a big believer, and in my execution is something that I've done, is making sure that we have those conversations early on, that technology and the planning process is right alongside with business. That collaboration is so crucial, because missing that steps, that one step, you know, creates a ripple effect where projects end up not being successful. So I've always worked, you know, when I come into an organization, I look at it as, you know, my business partner looked at me as their technology partner, working together hand in hand to create what is required for that successful execution. So I'll give you an example of my favorite scenario ever. Was my one of my former boss brought me into his organization, and one of my first questions to him was how are you placed in the leadership within that organization? And he said, "Oh, I have a seat at the table, at the CEO's table." I'm like, okay, I'm going to come work for you because that's how we're going to be successful, because you are at the table and you get to voice and speak on the impact and the, you know, of technology on whatever idea that is. And so that by the time the idea gets to us in terms of execution, we know that technology has already been taken into account. And always set up technology steering committees that involve all the way from the CEO to all of his direct reports to make sure that the prioritization process, the decision to move engagement forward, is not just a business decision, it's business and technology together, and the technology leadership at the table. So I believe strongly that having technology at the table, asking the right questions and answering questions from back to the business, you know, and vice versa, is, you know, is how projects should be executed. You should not go at it alone, have a business. Also, one of my pet peeves is having a business stakeholder meeting with a vendor and signing a contract without technology being present. It's something that I absolutely, I've run a couple of PMOs in my life, I would definitely reset, you know, that project. We have to reset the baseline. We can't do that. We can't execute on that project. We have to go back. I have to re-review that contract. I have to re-engage with the vendor. I have to then, before I can put that project through for execution, because it won't work, right? Because there's so many scenarios within the technology firm that the business is not aware of and cannot discuss and cannot ask, right? And simply asking a few questions via email and then moving ahead with signing a contract, that project's already heading towards failure. I can tell you from experience, it's never success. It will be successful, but it will take, if it was a project that was supposed to be 6 months, it's gonna end up taking you 36 months. Because of that one mistake. So I'm such a big believer in that collaborative partnership between business and technology for successful execution.
You're striking a nerve there, because it's, you know, something I saw early in my career, probably 18 years ago, was the lack of alignment of IT with the organization, and the misalignment even within technology teams interdepartmentally, and the amount of waste and lack of collaboration and just, you know, kind of a tangled mess in some organizations, and a lot of organizations, probably more than half, right? And if you look at, I'm on the board of SIM, Society for Information Management. If you look at the studies, you know, like the major problem, a major problem, if not the number one, if not number one, it's number two, is still misalignment of IT with the business. IT is still not being properly aligned with the business. But if you step back and think about it now, everyone is a technology company now. And if we're not leveraging technology as an organization to move forward and differentiate and bring and capture the market share and then keep the market share by keeping your end customer happy because of their now expectations, like we talked about earlier, then you're going to be shooting yourselves in the foot, right? But you know, it's we're in interesting times because there's so many organizations that are cutting budgets, they're cutting staff, right? It's happening. It's been happening for, you know, a year or so. And part of it is, yes, maybe they're right sizing. You know, some people say that, you know, a lot of organizations were over hiring a few years back and now they're kind of right sizing. But if at the end of the day, they're looking at cutting out waste or, you know, they're trimming the fat, so to speak. But if you start doing the digging and you look interdepartmentally at what these different departments are buying, similar technologies, they're not leveraging each other's resources. There's stuff that's being there, sitting there, not being used at all, that's been paid for years. There's tons of waste that's not being uncovered. And, you know, I've seen that for many, many years. It was one of the inspirations for doing what we're doing in our approaches is to kind of move forward with technology and humans integrated more effectively and aligned and move forward in a better light to mitigate and reduce a lot of this waste, because I see it as the future unfolds and accelerates with all of this technological advancement. It's going to be more and more important to get that cleaned up and aligned, because that misalignment will be amplified, or the organizations will be hindered from being able to take advantage of the technological advancements if everything's too messy, so to speak.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, when I always come in from especially from an execution perspective, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I always do, you know, because like you said, you can cut, you know, you can lay off people, but which is needed and absolutely necessary sometimes, right? But the waste I see happening within the organization from a project execution perspective, the amount of savings that companies can see from that alone by putting the right framework and due diligence in place. And when I come in, usually I'm not the most favorite liked person when I run PMOs or set up execution frameworks. You know, I'm not usually the favorite liked person until they start seeing the money coming in, right? In one instance, I think my very first 30 days, I took the first few weeks of, you know, a couple of weeks just to do an assessment. I told them, don't even rush me into like, oh, we're going to execute this project. Let me do my own due diligence, right? I did the assessment and I saved the company, after completing my assessment and my recommendation, we saved $7 million. Think about that. This is an entity that was looking for money to execute project, yet we were wasting $7 million that could have executed, you know, a few projects, right? And I did that by just taking a really good look at what they consider to be a project and whether or not there was duplication happening if there was duplication, there was consolidation, right? We consolidated it. There's going to be one project and you all are going to leverage from this one project. You don't need to start your own project So it's usually not an easy thing to do, I will tell you, to walk into an organization and you're the most hated person. But you have to stand your ground, right? You have to, and that's why when I typically accepted project management office or execution type office, I always have to understand where the leadership, are you going to back my approach, right? Because my approach is very stringent sometimes, right? To where some of the functional leaders will be like, nobody's ever told me that before. Why are you to come tell me I have to cancel this project? Right? So that's it, that's what for me, my challenge to the leadership is to always pick the right person to run the execution of especially key initiatives that they want, that's going to be the driver in the market for that organization. So usually when I come in, I wear my consulting hat. I do. I'm like, I have no, I'm not, I don't have the baggage that comes with being part of the organization for years and years. So I'm here, I'm looking at it completely with a brand new set of eyes. And I'm telling you, this set of projects doesn't need to exist anymore. You can can them tomorrow, today. Right, like you could have counted them like yesterday, and focus your resources on these projects, and then you're going to be able to realize what you're looking for. So we have projects that get started and stopped after millions of dollars have been spent. If you did the due diligence, that should not happen. And I see that happening every day in most organizations I walk into is not doing the due diligence or not paying attention enough or asking the tough questions because they've built relationships and their relationship supersedes the benefits of executing efficiently and in a lean manner. So I completely agree with you. I am a big advocate for lean execution, and that lean execution, be it headcounts, be it finances, be it quality execution, those are the three things that I bring to the table. Is you can guarantee that you're going to get that if I'm running your execution of any type of initiative, you're going to get the truth. Whether or not you can stand behind that truth is where I usually challenge the leadership, right? It's when you are in positions, I always tell people you manage up, you manage down, you manage sideways, and that means you have to manage your leadership and help them understand the benefits of what you're trying to achieve. Yeah, I can go on that forever. It's one of my most passionate subject is that.
So I have a question kind of in relation to that. So in relation to insights into like a project or initiative where really bridging the gap between the business and tech, like can you give us an example of maybe where that led to like enhanced innovation or like market success?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, I can name some of the names, of course, because of some of the nature of industry I've been involved in, healthcare, gaming and all of that. But I will tell you that demand management is a key ingredient in that relationship, right? It's not about business dictating what technology should do, or technology dictating this is what business should do. For me, I manage a demand management team where both business and technology are in the room, right? We are dissecting this solution, this workflow process. Where are the challenges? These are the challenges. Of course, you don't do all of that in one meeting, right? I typically believe in having, when I'll give an act of build a team called business relationship managers, but they're technologists, right? But they're embedded with the business. Right, so they get to understand that business really well, right? They attend the businesses, the meeting that the business holds. They are like almost mini strategies for the leader of that function, and they help them, walk through business process flows and identify where the gaps are. Your gap in making you better becomes your project. Right, it's not, oh, I went here and someone was demoing this, it looks so cool, I want that to be part of my project, to be part of an investment that I want to do for my team. No, how does it fit into your business model, right? And where is the gap? What are you trying to solve, right? That's what I want business to focus on telling me as a technologist, right? This is my problem. This is what I'm trying to solve. This is my business flow. And this is where this gap exists. And it's how I want to close it. Then we go into assessing and analyzing that gap and say, you know what? We already have a solution within our technology platform that can address that. Or no, we need to bring in this new solution to address that. And helping business is a mutual back and forth communication. It's not, because most people, business always have the money. So IT feels they have to pander to business to deliver whatever, or give and take. No, it should be a conversation where you're realistically assessing the gap. And once you identify what that gap is, then you get to work with your technology experts to help speak to the business in the language that the business understands. How this is going to be solved and addressed. Once you start building that type of rapport with you and business will, you be the first person in my experience. At first they may have hated me, but once they get to understand that this is for the good of what they're doing, I'm helping them run their business successfully, right? By giving you or executing to the way that you're going to go to the market and be successful. Business starts to call me. I don't even call them anymore. They call me. I'm not begging them to, let me be part of your meeting. They call me and say, hey, Mayor, we need you to be in this. We're having a discussion. We want you to be in the room, or send someone from your team to be part of the room, to be part of the discussion, because at the end of the day, we want to see if this is an idea that is viable as a project. And then we start to assess it, financial impacts, execution, from a headcount, resources, software, infrastructure, all of that comes into the discussion after those initial sets of discussions. So it's a partnership that is so crucial that, we can't miss a beat on it. We have to work that way we're not mutually exclusive, we're mutually inclusive. Right. One cannot exist without the other. Right. It's like business needs technology. Technology needs business to be able to execute. Right. So it's a mutually inclusive collaboration that, has to happen early on. Business should be the first time that idea crossed their mind before they reach out to anyone, before they reach out to a vendor, because a vendor is going to come, they're going to sell you whatever they want to sell you, right? You need to have your business partner, your technology partner, in a symbiotic relationship with you when you have that discussion, so that when you are at the table, you're speaking to your needs, technology is speaking to a fit. How is this solution going to fit in our environment? So I've had a great, I would say that's been my ingredient for success. It's not even about the execution themselves. It's about once you build that early on and you and the business and technology on the same side, the execution becomes so seamless. The challenges you'll be facing is testing of the quality testing of the product, right? Because you guys have already agreed on what makes sense from both technology and business perspective. So I've had great success. I think one I can mention to you would be here in Dallas. I know you'll be visiting Dallas, very soon. Whenever you come, there's a hospital here. It's a safety net hospital called Parkland Hospital. Right, that hospital is a hospital I led the execution of all technology products to bring that, all of the technology projects, everything came through. I ran the PMO for the IT organization at the time. And we will never have been successful if we did not work collaboratively. We launched that hospital on time, under budget, at least from the time I joined, under budget, to get it successfully the way it is today. So it's something that I truly, truly believe in doing in partnership and delivering according to, building a network of relationship between my business partners and the technology teams.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, that it's so important for technology to be the, what did you say? You said the inclusive business and technology needs to be
mutually inclusive.
Mutually inclusive.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think logically, the vast majority of people understand that. Of course, there's still some people that are set in their old ways and right, and some maybe antiquated industries and or organizations. But I think the vast majority, they understand that logically. Yet if you look at one of the, if not the number one problem in organizations is IT not being aligned with the business. And so logically, like they know it, but then there's still so many silos operating within organizations, which is, you know, I think part of the problem is they're not, it's a big animal to chew and a big thing to fix, right? And so it's difficult. And I think a lot of people don't know how to necessarily fix it and it's challenging. So it's a,
and it takes, still, yeah, it takes a lot of, it takes a lot of efforts and it takes, leadership from, you know, leadership, both top and bottom, to make it happen. It has to be purposeful, right? It's, you know, sometimes we say things and they become, oh yeah, you know, this is, but they have meetings that are not, to me, sometimes can be very shallow. They don't dig into the real discussion points. And I will tell you, my success has been, for me, I see meetings as, we've already agreed, right? Decisions most of the time are not made in meetings, right? It's just to showcase what the agreements have been made behind the scene. That's why I mentioned that networking and collaboration, right? I'm not going to invite a leader of a function into a meeting without, first of all, working with them to understand their position, to share with them how we're going to be successful together. So we've already have the agree, we have the agreement behind the scene, right? In terms of understanding each other, knowing the roles and responsibilities that we both play within this, you know, this execution, right? One of the things I see why that failed is most people think, I'm gonna call you into a meeting and we're going to make that agreement. It doesn't happen. You know, because they're gonna come not understanding you, not knowing where you're coming from. They come with a defense guard on, right? And that defense guard, every answer they give you is based on that defense. Because they don't know you that well. You haven't showed them that you're a trusted partner, right? So until you get to building those relationship and that substantial collaboration between them, and they get to understand your passion and what you bring to the table versus, you know, their passion to what they want to deliver to their customers. You cannot, that's one of the things that why you see the meetings happen, they're very superficial, right? Because everybody's still thinking with some kind of subconscious defense mechanism, even though they may be going through the motions of saying, yeah, that makes sense, yes, let's do it. But then when they go back to their teams, they probably tell their team, I really don't buy what they were saying, so don't even bother wasting your time working with them. You know, I've seen that happen. So it's about putting the effort in to build those relationships behind the scene, right? Once you build them behind the scene, once you get in a room, I'm not saying you can do that with everyone that's supposed to, but the key stakeholders are that decision makers, you know, and that sometimes may not be the department head. It may be an SME within their team, a subject matter expertise within their team that they've relinquished because that person knows so much. So you have to figure out who will allow them to say yes. And what do I need to do to build that relationship with them to allow them to enable that person to come to this meeting and say yes? So that's what I see missing. We hold meetings to hold meetings to hold meetings to hold meetings, but yet no decision is made that will move the effort in the right direction. Each person goes back to their own silo and continue to execute what they think, you know, is best for them.
And I'm biting my tongue. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole because it's a big rabbit hole, but it's got human science, team science wrapped all around it. I mean, there's a science to all of it, and it's, you know, we would literally be here all day if we, you know, went down this path, but we'll have to do that on another show. But yeah, no, it's so crucial and it's so difficult and it's, you know, but it's got to be done, but it's you know, it's done better some places than others. But, you know, and those were, you know, is there any other key strategy maybe that you would want to share that you haven't already kind of touched on that that really helps kind of ensure that both the business and technology objectives, like business objectives and technology capabilities, are aligned well for project success? Anything else you want to chime in on real quick before you kind of move on?
Yeah, I think the key ingredient, you know, like I said earlier, is helping business understand the foundational services that technology offer, right? If you can do that, your business will trust, and you can show them results, right? So one thing is to say, oh yeah, we have this technology, but then it takes you 20 months to execute what they need when their competitor are hitting the market in 6 months. Then they're gonna run to try to find vendors that can help them compete. So that those foundational services that in-house technology offers, the roadmap needs to be clear, and the execution path to get there needs to be clear, and help business understand that. I think that is the key ingredients, really. And then, of course, the other will fall into place as you walk through that. But until that understanding exists between business and technology, is going to continue to be a challenge for some organizations because they don't, that is a missing ingredient.
Let's talk a little bit about the roadmap, right? So any advice or any insights into how to create a technology roadmap that is, in a sense, in alignment with the business goals, but flexible enough to flex for future advancements?
I think you are familiar with the concept of platformization, right? We build platforms now, and creating a roadmap where you have a platform that's not stagnant, that continuously evolve with, you know, like the latest and emerging technologies in the market, is something that I think is crucial in laying down your roadmap for the business to understand. So having that clear vision as to where you see your platform going, growing, or being sunsetted for the one that has been in existence for too long and you want to replace it. Knowing that, having the expertise to help build those plug and play type solutions where different products can be plug and play within your platform is really key in a roadmap. And taking that and looking at the business drivers, the goals, you know, the vision for the business, and then, you know, working with them to kind of showcase, you know, and you know, with that, it also gives you the ability to plug, like I said, plug and play, move, you know, because due to market pressure, due to regulations, things can change, right? So if you have a plug and play foundational services, you know, you'll be able to, you know, to work with the business because there are things that are beyond their control that they have to fight to stay relevant, right? And if technology is so stagnant that you can't do that, then your roadmap is, you know, I tell people a 5-year roadmap this year is just something you put on paper, right? It doesn't really, you know, you can have that long-term vision from a foundational services perspective, but your roadmap should be in quarters, right? Every quarter you have to refresh, your roadmap, you know, because things are changing so fast that, you know, the ability to create quarterly roadmap is so crucial than, you know, creating a 5-year roadmap and try to backpedal and fit things into it is not going to work. So I go with the approach of, you know, yes, we have a long-term strategic vision, you know, from a technology platform perspective. Emerging technologies are going to pop up here and there. Of course, you work with your innovation teams to keep an eye on that. So you see what is coming and see how you can tweak your roadmap, but your execution roadmap has to be a quarterly roadmap, because by the time you wait till quarter three, you know, two quarters down the road, you're already obsolete. You're delivering a product that's going to be behind what other people are putting in the market. So that constant revision, reviewing, understanding market trends, and making sure that you're taking into account regulations that may come and impede your roadmap, and proactively planning ahead for those is one of the things that I will say. As you create a roadmap, keep an eye on those things, and your roadmap will be solid.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, we operate on a framework, and it's, you know, we're adjusting the roadmap every 90 days, right? And it's in alignment with human nature, and it's proven, scientifically proven, that, you know, humans get off track after about 90 days, right? We'll kind of start going on some tangents. And so we need to hone it back in every 90 days, realign, adjust where needed, and kind of make sure that we're course correcting, so to speak. And it's, you know, it's almost, it is mind boggling to me for technology leaders now, you know. And I'll use the example of GPT coming out recently, right? But last year, the beginning of last year, it's kind of when I jumped on the bandwagon and just went full-fledged in and started developing, you know, our own tech human AI and some different things. But just what I've seen since the beginning of last year, and it was like, it literally was like almost every week I was finding out something new, or at least every month, it was just changing so fast. You know, if, along those lines of, you know, keeping in strategic alignment with the business, can you talk a little bit about the strategic importance of a CIO, a CTO, CISO, maybe being, you know, part of that business planning?
Oh, yes, it is. I think it is, it's an absolute must that CIO, CTO, whatever term, I'll say CIO, CISO. Definitely a must, right? In every single business collaboration discussion, they need to be present, right? Because, or a representative, a subject matter expert from their team needs to be present. Whether it's CTO, CIO, both, you know, some organizations do both, some do only one, right? They do CIO or they do CTO. But CIO in combination with CISO, because as you know, with every new technology, they are bad actors, right? They're looking for opportunities to prove to you that they can break your, you know, come into your environment and take it over. So having both of those discussion when you're having a business discussion around new product or existing product, to me is a must-have. It's not even a question these days. If you really, really want to be successful and you really, really want to keep your company secure, you really, really want to drive innovation at the pace at which the industry is going, that those two are given and have to be in a room every single time.
Speaking of changes and in rapid changes, you know, from a security perspective, it is, I mean, I feel for some of these CISOs, right, in these organizations, because it's like a nonstop threat.
It's a nonstop.
And it's evolving. It's like you're chasing a moving target.
And with the new technology changes, you know, it's almost like a DNA that continues to duplicate and replicate itself in different shapes. So it's a job that I think people that work within the technology, like I say, in technology, there's so many varied career paths within technology, but security is one of those that I've seen that it's quite intriguing as to how much they do, and I think the appreciation for them is my appreciation for them when I work with them is through the roof. It's like, you guys, I can't even be in your shoes, right, with what you do. Sleepless nights, you know, it's a challenging area, but again, if we build those, like we said before from the get-go, if as we are planning to design that solution and we have them in a room, right? You prevent, you know, they give you scenarios where this, how it can be stable. So, so definitely I'm 100% with you there. Is those two absolute must have in any conversation about any net new product that needs to hit the market today.
Yeah, it really takes a village, you know, and along the lines of team science, with your background, you have an interesting, unique background. How do you really leverage your background and experience to really drive and foster a culture of innovation, team collaboration, all that good stuff and within the technology teams?
Oh, absolutely. I think I am a big proponent of not making decisions in silo. So team collaboration for me is the key ingredient to any successful initiative I've led in the past, is the diversity of thoughts, the diversity of the way we think and reason. Something, someone will see something way down the road in that project execution that you have not even thought about. So building, I think this day, you know, there's a term for it that at least the last time I used it, we call it product model approach, right? A product model approach is where you build a team of experts from all the different facets of technology that exist within, you know, that organization. And every execution is a pod. And that pod is inclusive of all those subject matter expertise. And, you know, so it limits failure down the road. And it also, if you fail fast and you fix and you are re-executing and delivering success. So I've brought teams together from, you know, all, you know, business also part of that part. It's not just technology, business, even within the business, the different lines of business, where this product is going to touch them, whether directly or indirectly, needs to be part of that discussion, for success to happen at the end. So I'm a huge proponent of, diversity of thought, diversity of cultures at work, diversity of, you know, is because it helps with streamlining and executing fast, whatever you're building.
Yeah, and I'm on the DE&I, I'm on the I don't know what we call it, council, maybe DE&I council for SIM. So I'll collaborate, you know, in meetings periodically with SIM National, and we're talking about these topics. And you know, my viewpoint on it is that, you know, yes, we have diversity of culture, diversity of backgrounds, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it boils down to diversity of thought. And I believe that, you know, how we were brought up and what cultures or what family systems, whatever, that really is kind of what is programming our minds, so to speak. And it's, if you think about it, that diversity of thought, diversity of experience, all of that stuff is what, you know, it's probably not a good analogy, but that's what brings the strength. But if you think about like dogs, like mutts are very resilient because they have so much different DNA. It's the same with teams. If you have very diverse teams of very different types of people, different upbringings, different backgrounds, they're going to think differently. And they're going to see different angles of that problem, bring different creative ideas. So it's so crucial. It's one of the main reasons that, you know, I created TechHuman was to solve some of these problems specifically within technical teams. But can you give us an example of maybe how bringing some of this diverse thinking or diversity of culture, whatever, how has improved, you know, maybe created an improvement or an innovation in your experience?
Absolutely. I'll give you, like I said, I can't go deep into a specific example, but definitely I have executed some of the most complex and large initiatives, and the teams that I put together, the innovation that they brought to execution was short of, you know, I was blown away myself. You know, it's is you know, the human diversity that I brought in. I think I'll give you an example. One way I was, I lived in Atlanta at the time, and I frequented this bar. It's not a very great example, and this bartender was amazing. I was like, wow, this guy's, you know, he was, I mean, it's a busy, he was a busy, busy Tex-Mex restaurant, right? And he knew, you know, he was making sure everyone of them. I'm sitting down there looking at him. I'm like, and at the time I was with this company where I had, you know, very large accounts, and then I had some small accounts that, when I came on board, were very unhappy because nobody was paying attention to them because we're focusing a lot on our big clients. And you know, one of them, the CEO, was, he made it a point to call every morning and just yell at us, right? And so I'm sitting there looking at this guy, and I ended up staying extra longer than I typically will until everything slowed down. I'm like, hey, have you ever thought about working outside of this environment? He's like, sure. What do you have in mind? I'm like, you know, I'm part of a technology team, and I have some accounts that I need someone with attention to details to help me manage them and successfully turn them around. I mean, we were getting threats from them every day of, you know, taking us to court or suing us because we're not, you know, delivering to their satisfaction. And I was pretty much got 6 months, and I was really getting bogged down by you know, this small sets of about three clients. And I asked him, do you have a college degree? He said, yeah, I have an associate degree. I'm like, okay, you know, here's my, back then we used to pass business cards. Here's my business card. Call me tomorrow after you wake up and we can talk. And this guy said, I'll do one better. I'll come see you in your office if you want me to. I'm like, oh, sure. And this guy called me, and he showed up dressed up in a suit, and you know, he was totally a different person from the person I saw last night in a bar, you know, serving people. And he came, and I told him, I said, this is a job. I'm gonna give you a job as a project coordinator. And this is how much we're gonna pay you. This is that. These are the benefits. Da, 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 da. He was like, I don't even have benefits today. So when do you want me to start? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me call and get clearance from my HR people. I don't know if I can actually do it yet, but you know, absolutely. And I called my HR lady who was out of Boston. I'm like, this is what happened, and I want to hire this young guy, and he's really amazing. And as you guys know, these three customers have been so unhappy before I joined, and they're still unhappy, and I really want to turn that around. She said, let me just talk to him, and then you know, we can go from there. So he spoke to him. I literally gave him a small conference room. I said, go in there, and you know, this person will call you. And she called, and then after that, he came back and said, she wants to speak to you. And we hired him on that same day. And he joined us, and I mean, within a month, he turned those three accounts around. That the CEO of the company came down and wanted to meet him. And like, and it was so funny. The one thing he did was, the CEO had these company pins that he wanted. He was always happy when he comes into the office and he sees someone wearing it. And this young man shows up every day in his suit with his pin that he got from his orientation. You know, he was, you know, that, I mean, I didn't even, you know, I told him to document what he did because that was, because I had other people work with these customers. And then suddenly he came within a month. All of them were so happy. They were sending me emails. Thank you so much for finally putting someone in place to take care of us. We feel very thankful. And he didn't even deliver anything. He just had a collaboration with them and gave their message. And he made sure that he followed up on the technology side to make sure that that was addressed. And he followed back up with them and said, it's addressed. That's all he did. And, you know, turn things around. So the diversity of thought, like you talked about before. And, you know, this guy came in, had, I didn't give him anything. I said, I saw the way you work in a bar. Treat this like that. Just do whatever you were doing to make your customers happy. take that formula and make these guys happy. And people were, they were, you know, my boss looked and said, are you crazy? You are putting a bartender in charge of managing customer software solution accounts. That's, I've never heard of that. I said, let him do his thing, you know. And within a month, we were all, they all, you know, in the meeting, everybody was looking at me like, you really did it. I'm like, I didn't do anything. He did it. You know, so that's how, for me, you know, and that's one instance at, you know, at the Parkland Hospital I mentioned to you about, I hired a guy that was my barista from Starbucks because I saw how he was treating and he came in and he did. So it's about, you know, for me, looking at someone that has a particular strength that can address a solution that some of us may, you know, we're overthinking it because we're overthinking. We've given these guys everything and yes, they're still unhappy, you know. But all they needed was that one-on-one touch, attention, someone showing them that they care. And we were all so busy with other things that we felt that once a week or once every 2 weeks attention we gave them wasn't enough. And this guy came, if they call him as he's driving home, he will say he'll pull to the side of the road and he will listen to them and he will take their message. So, you know, solving a problem sometimes doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you have the smartest people in the room. It's about the smartest strategies to get to the solution that cost is. It's not about what you want, it's about what the customer is looking for. And you have to find a way that you connect with them on their level and address the issue. So that's the only example I can share without getting great. Into trouble.
It's a great example. Yeah. It's very much in alignment with one of our core values of solutions mindset, right? And it's, there's a book I've read, it's called Hiring for Attitude. Right. And it's, you know, you can train skills, but it's very difficult to train attitude.
Exactly. Right? Yep. I need to read that book. Wow. I need to write Hiring for Attitude. Yeah. I need to write that down.
I've designed, with the help of some others, I've designed some pretty elaborate interview frameworks. You know, we've actually helped some clients kind of to do the same, to kind of leverage human science to be able to identify the proper team members and proper people that can help solve a problem within an organization, within a team. So it's a good, great book. Great.
Awesome.
Read.
I would definitely read it. Hiring for Attitude. Okay. Good.
Yeah. It's a good one. Let's start kind of coming to an end here. We're getting close on time. You know, before we do kind of close things out, I want to ask you a couple more questions. So in your opinion, what technology does the world need that doesn't exist yet?
Wow. that's a very good question. I don't know if I have the right answer, but with AI and all this going on, I don't even know what else we can imagine down the road. I mean, flying cars. I don't know. And I think if I'm not mistaken, there's some prototype already out there of someone, you know, taking off in the middle of the road and going up, you know, the traffic around it, how you control all of that. It's short of living in some of the things we used to think would be in the movie only. I think we live in some of it today. I think the last time you and I talked, we talked about, you know, we thought ChatGPT 4 was like, you know, and now we have where movie set director, you know, like Tyler Perry are saying, oh, I don't need to build anything more because if I want Iceland in my backyard, I can click a button and shoot a movie with Iceland in the background. In the background, you know, so it's technology is so fascinating and growing so fast. We have self-driving cars now and, you know, all of these things. So the sky is the limit, you know, a plane being piloted by AI, you know, I have no idea. So there's so much to think of, but I think from my conservative side, I would think maybe we probably should slow down a little bit in thinking of anything new until we understand what we already have, you know, so that would be my answer. I really don't know. The sky is the limit at this point, you know?
Yeah, I think I would second that. I think that we need to kind of take a step back and look at what we're building and what we're releasing, you know, into cyberspace, so to speak.
Exactly. You know, I can't think of the name of the movie. There's a movie where Halle Berry and, you know, where the moon was taking over the earth or something like that, you know, where AI took over, you know, the AI took over, you know, something like that. I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. I truly am not, I don't believe that, you know, an AI is going to, you know, take over the world. You know, is someone who doesn't understand how code is designed and built, you know, can believe that. But, you know, you and I both know that the chances of that happening are zero to none. But again, it's still very fascinating to see how fast it is moving. And for me, I just call that step back because of the bad actors.
And it makes me think about, so like some, you know, I'm very good at identifying patterns, right? And so, like, I've seen this kind of unfolding for years, but it's, you know, like Starlink is kind of like Skynet. Blockchain is like an automated database that automation and robots and AI are going to make automated decisions on, right? Which can be potentially immutable out there in cyberspace. Well, what happens when, you know, this underlying infrastructure of blockchain technology, you know, becomes potentially very crucial and we're dependent on it. And by that time, Starlink is now in full fledged. And then AI is even more powerful. What happens if all those come together? Like, you know, so I've had those thoughts before.
Exactly. Yeah. It's scary. Yeah. I mean, it's actually, you know, for those of us that are in it and you see it and you see how fast things are moving. I mean, I go back to the days when I was a software developer, C++ software developer, where we had to write our own objects to decide what's going, to be able to write code, and, you know, to now where, you know, everything is packaged for you, and you just have to execute, you know. So it's scary, but I love it, actually. I love it. I just very, very conservative and cautious about the bad actors, you know, like that's my only area that I when you talk about security and ensuring that you're designing, you know, I look at, you know, the name of your company, Tech Human, like, it's like, let's be, as we build this technology, let's continue to be human, okay? Because that human side of us is what's innovate and bring all of this out of us. Let's not lose that. And that's so key for me, is remaining human in light of all the changes in technology.
Yeah. And to that note, I think it's perfect timing that you mentioned that, is that, you know, really Tech Human is more of a movement, right? And so, yes, Tech Human is a technology company where we bring tech and human science together, but Tech Human, the concept is more of a movement. And that is, you know, part of that concept is that, you know, as humans, we're inherently flawed and we don't, it's hard for us to see where we're missing the mark. That's why we need coaches. That's why we need consultants. That's why we need therapists. That's why we need counselors. That's why every major, you know, the best sports athletes in the world all have coaches, right? Because they help them see what they're missing. But we all have baked in cognitive bias. So as technology leaders, I believe that technology leaders, we're building the future, but we're not necessarily able to see where we're making those mistakes. And we have to be careful about not building those human flaws into powerful technologies that are potentially automated, because we could do some harm. So it's good to have that awareness at least, right? And to check yourself every once in a while. Yeah. So Mary, thanks again for joining us today and sharing your insights. It was a great conversation. You know, one of my things on my bucket list is to write a book, and I'm very close to, you know, potentially pulling that trigger and starting. But I know that you recently were involved in a new book launch. Can you help the audience understand more about your current collaborative book project?
Absolutely, and that's one of mine too. But this was a baby step into that process, is the collaboration with 17 other women in technology. It's called Ladies in Tech, Volume 2, Changing the Face of Technology. That's the book title. We're sharing our experiences as ladies in technology, our journeys, you know, So it's a collaborative, it's an anthology actually with, you know, so chapter one is not going to be the same as chapter two or chapter three, because if you want to read about Mary Austin in the book, then you go to my chapter and you can go through, you know, a snippet of my experience. But definitely this was a great step into, just like you said, my journey too, is I want to write my own personal comprehensive book. But this was a good step to doing that, and I'm so excited to be working with these 17 women. The visionary author, her name is Kenyatta Rockers. She brought us all together, as you know, we're all LinkedIn friends somehow. So some of us have never even met in person, but we've published a book together, and it's number one bestseller, new release on Amazon, right? In three categories: leadership, technology, and education, which I was surprised. And then the third one was entrepreneurship. So we're number second in that. So I'm really, really excited. And you know, it's free on Amazon. Kindle version, but this Saturday we will be launching the official book in Thurston, Maryland. So I'm flying to Maryland this Friday. We'll have the book launch where we do some book signing and have some summit with so many people to come, so we can meet and talk about some of, you know, anyone interested in being part of technology. And the goal of this is, you know, they said people like to get into things when they see people that look like them in the technology, right? Or in whatever industry it is. And we want to encourage more young women. I know the STEAM programs are forging ahead so hard. There's so many, you know, so many people driving that. But we still feel like a lot of voices for some of us that have been in the industry for so long should share our stories, so that as people get into it, they can learn from, you know, mistakes that we may have made in our career, getting to where we are today, or successes that they can take away some golden nuggets that will help them better immerse themselves in taking a step into technology and not be afraid of it. It's demystifying that, you know, fear of people. Oh, I don't want to get in technology, or maybe I just want to be locked in a room coding all day. You know, it's not like that. So that's what the book is about. It's available now on Amazon. You know, Ladies in Tech, Volume 2, Changing the Face of Technology. You know, it's a short, quick coffee table book where you can pick any chapter at any given day and just read that person's experience. And then if you have time, you continue, or the next day you can come back to it and read about, because we have people from cybersecurity, CIO, different technology strategies like myself, you know, so different backgrounds coming together. A lady that runs online tech university, where she's, you know, it's almost like where people can go get certification. So there are different people in the book. So it's exciting to be part of it. And I look forward to, just like you, going back and sitting down, because as I was trying to pencil what can be in that book, I found myself writing so much that I already have some of my content that I'm looking forward to actually publishing my own personal, on, you know, and not co-authoring, but publishing my own book that speaks to the varied industry background that I've had in and all of it in technology. So
nice. No, it sounds like an awesome book. I'll have to pick that up for sure. And I know some of my teammates will definitely want to pick that up as well. So again, thanks for your time, Mary. It was a great conversation. You know, always great talking with you, and looking forward to seeing you in Dallas. Listeners, be sure to check out her work and follow her on social media. Website links and social handles, as well as a link to the book on Amazon, will be in the show description. You know, finally today, Mary, from our conversation, what's one piece of actionable advice that you'd like to leave the audience with?
You know, be your authentic self. As we all are in this technology journey, continue to be and to bring your voice to bear, so that we can build products that, you know, we want our children, our parents, our friends to leverage in their day-to-day life. So it's just that simple.
Thanks again, Mary. Really great talking with you. Listeners, don't forget to help your fellow tech humans share this podcast and follow me on LinkedIn at JavierGuerra360. See you next time on the Tech Human Experience.
The Tech Human Experience.